only one in many now. The Fed Reserve has got to go. Meeting ends is getting tough. Shout it out, we've had enough. Let's put it out of our misery. The Fed Reserve must cease to be. Must end the Fed Reserve. Wake up, people, live and learn. There's no store of value in a fern. All my gumbo rangers know. We're freaking doomed, it's a horror show. Government promise ain't worth a damn. The Fed is an outrageous scam.
Harmony yes. Divinations on this windy and cold Wednesday, November 26, 2008. My name is Elizabeth Peter. Hope you're all well and holding on tight to your high frequencies so we can all get through this wild ride. Friends, we are officially on day 6 of the Mayan calendar since the 13th of November. These early days can be likened to the first moments of dawn as we are waking up from a dream, maybe a bad dream, maybe a good dream, not really sure what direction to take. So please let us stay in our centers and hold on, focus on the now. Let's not lose it and not let go, no matter what. The chant you just heard is from End the Fed, a nationwide campaign to abolish the Federal Reserve Bank and the Federal Reserve Act, in hopes of creating a more stable U.S. financial system. A rally was held last Saturday, November 22nd, at Federal Reserve Banks in 39 cities across the U.S. I myself went to one in my city, and you can visit the End the Fed website for more info on how to join this cause. I believe this is probably the only cause we have at the moment. First off, the outline of the show. If you are new to Earth Harmony, my mission statement remains simple. Let us focus on sharing joy, oneness, abundance, gratitude, and self-awareness at all times. Let's be ethical and use intuition, not fear. And at the beginning of each show, we start with the abundance intent. Let's take a deep breath and focus on the third eye. Abundance intent. I focus on the holy high self within as the only source of my prosperity. I know this inner presence as the only activity in my financial, personal, other affairs. That is the only activity in these affairs as it is the substance of all things visible. I trust in the principle of abundance in action within and without. So it is. Today, as always, I would like to encourage you to call into the show. I invite your questions, concerns, comments. You can find out more about me on redlotus.org, my website, and my email address is elizabeth@redlotus.org. Dear friends, a quote from Lyndon LaRouche, monetarism is dead. Bury it before it buries us. And that is the theme of the show today again. We will be continuing our interview with the great behind-the-scenes economic expert, John Hofel, who's been senior banking columnist of the Executive Intelligence Review since 1989. Currently, he's featured on the weekly reviews with Jeff Steinberg on the LaRouche website, LaRouchePhD.com, a very educational and results-oriented organization. Mr. Hofel has been on the inside of the monetary system for many, many years, and we can clearly see how he probably knows more than many what this monetary system is about and how incredibly it damaged our economy, how it created this havoc we're in right now. And Mr. Hofel is here to offer some viable solutions to rebuild from here. In fact, the LaRouche organization is about that right now. Hello, John. Thanks for coming back to talk with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Elizabeth.
John, on November 21st, Lyndon LaRouche declared that leading bankers and government officials have gone from fear to panic. What do you think he means by that?
Well, we have a meltdown in the derivatives market. There's this quadrillion-dollar-plus market in financial speculation in derivatives that goes on off the balance sheets of the banking system, and it is collapsing. And this is what is driving all of the liquidations. You see all the sales in the stock market and sales in commodities and other things. That is, people are desperately running for the exits at the moment. And they've been trying to keep this process under control through bailouts and things like that, and through monetary measures, and that has not been working. And now, you have this continuing collapse of the banking system, as typified by the need to bail out Citibank. And so the psychology is shifting. It's been shifting over time. They thought they could handle it, and then they were worried that they weren't going to handle it, and now they realize that they're not handling it, and so they're just panicking. And you can see that also in the way in which, you know, the two actions by the Fed this week, the bailout of Citibank and then the announcement that they're going to be buying all sorts of other securities and things. They're just, you know, throwing money at a problem, and they're not having any luck with it.
I looked on Bloomberg the other day, and the indexes are shooting up like in a hospital room when you see a heart attack patient is being resuscitated by their physicians, you know, from almost zero. It kind of started, all the charts started shooting up into the sky. I mean, it's just an amazing situation. And what do you think is going to come out of this?
Well, the only thing, the stock market goes down, 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 and then the Fed will jump in and pump a bunch of money into it, and it will shoot up. And then it'll start going down, down, down again.
And they're pumping money into the banks and big companies, but they barely talk about the people who are basically holding up this whole system.
Well, they don't care about those people. They care about saving the big money, and that's really at this point all they care about, and everything else is lip service.
So we're really nearing the showdown right now.
Yeah, I think we're in it, mm-hmm. And you can see that the Bush administration is just throwing money at things and hoping that they can hold together until they get out of town, and they're prepared to let things get worse rather than deal with them, because they're happy to dump it on the incoming Obama administration.
Well, it affects everyone. It affects them, too. I mean, it affects the whole world.
Well, it's true. I mean, what they're doing is totally irresponsible and clinically insane.
So our currency, if the law was enforced, is actually a credit currency. It's a currency of the U.S. government, a currency of the U.S. people. And somewhere LaRouche said other countries have monetary systems. Here in the U.S., we actually have a credit system, if it was properly implemented, right?
Right, yes. Constitutionally, we have a credit system where only Congress is designated the body which authorizes expenditures of money, and then the executive manages those expenditures. Congress creates the money, and it does so by issue, which it should do so in the constitutional system, through the issuance of credit. And instead, what we have is a situation which you can see very clearly in action just this week, where the Federal Reserve, which is not really an agency of the government, even though it acts on behalf of the government, is creating money on its own by creating reserves out of thin air that they pump into the banking system, and then they treat that as money in order to fund a lot of this bailout operation. So Our system says Congress can do that. Only Congress can do that. And in practice right now, we have the Federal Reserve basically deciding to and printing and creating money on its own.
But do you have any faith in our Congress, in our current setup, the way it is, with Congress being so ineffective?
No. Not right now.
And do you hope that the Obama presidency will bring better people into play?
I certainly hope that. I think the real problem is that we have to look not just at our government, but we have to look at ourselves. You know, when we founded this country, Benjamin Franklin was asked what kind of government we gave us. And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. And in order to keep it, what you have to have is a citizenry which is educated in the principles of good government and in the principles of things like economics, and will elect representatives who are also capable of dealing with these things. And that, you know, the caliber of the people we elect to represent us determines what kind of a government we get. And our problem is that we have a Congress which is completely inept, which is under the direction of people like Nancy Pelosi, moving to protect these financial interests against the welfare of the population. And while she certainly deserves all of the criticism you might want to give her for this, that fundamentally we have to look at ourselves, because we're the people who put these people in office. And we keep reelecting these people even though they prove to be totally incompetent. So if we're going to expect Congress to do the right thing, then we're going to have to do the right thing too.
Yeah. So you and the group, the LaRouche group, is strongly urging Congress to let this system go bankrupt and replace it with a credit system. What would this system look like? Did you work out some details?
Yes. The way to approach this, instead of just throwing money at the system and throwing money into these bankrupt institutions, that you have to admit, you start off by admitting that, in fact, this system is bankrupt, that it's got trillions of dollars, hundreds of trillions of dollars of bonds and stocks and, you know, all sorts of financial claims that can't be paid, and then over $250 billion in derivatives claims that can't be paid. So you say, okay, well, we can't pay this. I mean, you know, and we have to find some rational way to deal with this. And that's what bankruptcy is. When you have a situation in which you have debt you can't pay, you go through bankruptcy. The bankruptcy process looks and sees what debts, you know, what you have to protect and what you can afford to write off. And we have to write off, we freeze a bunch of this stuff to write most of it off later or work it out later. And meanwhile, you protect the population while you're doing so. So we shut down this system. We put it through bankruptcy. We reorganize the banks so that we have highly regulated banks which do the sorts of things that we need to make the economy function, like make loans and accept deposits and that sort of thing. But no more derivative speculation, no more engaging in all these wild securities like mortgage-backed securities and CDOs and all these other things. And we start putting our money into rebuilding the productive side of our economy, and we have to build our way out.
So the only leading politician that you hear these kinds of ideas from was Ron Paul. Is there anyone else? You don't hear anything about these ideas about replacing this system with anything else from Obama or anybody else, right?
No, you don't. They're all... I mean, you know, the problem with these presidential candidates is that they tend to be owned by the people with the big money. And the people with the big money want to keep that bailout coming.
So you don't have much faith in Obama really implementing this system that you're proposing?
Well, he's faced with a real problem, because he's going to come into office. His situation is in many respects similar to the situation faced by Franklin Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. In that he's coming into a situation where the nation is in serious, serious trouble, and some sort of bold action is going to have to be taken. And so they're planning for what they consider to be bold action. They're talking about stimulus programs, and they're talking about infrastructure programs and things like that. And I guess the real question is, you know, there seems to be a fight almost inside the Obama camp between some of the people associated with Hillary and Robert Rubin and his crowd, and some of the people that are more associated with the University of Chicago, and the, you know, which is known for its, to put it not very politely, fascist economics. And so the question of which way they're going to go, I think, is not entirely clear and is still being fought out. But if they go with infrastructure, for example, are they going to go with the public-private partnerships where they start, where their infrastructure program is based upon, you know, selling off public assets, like selling the right to companies to take over roads and charge tolls on the people who use them? And if that's their approach, then it'll only make things worse. If they adopt an approach more along the lines of what we're talking about, then that will help.
Well, in my view, they will not let go of their power over the people. And, of course, the people are just waking up to realize that, hey, we can have a say in this. We can have our power back. And the question is, will the people wake up, early enough to grab their own personal power and create these infrastructures, create these, develop a new system, maybe local systems. Maybe every state will have a different infrastructure system. Would you think that could be possibly developing?
Well, I think that it has to be done more on a national and even an international level in order to really be effective in terms of, you know, because what we've laid out is a series of great projects. Like, you have one of the major problems facing a large section of the western United States today is the lack of water. And there are ways to deal with that through large-scale water projects. Like, there's a project called the North American Water and Power Alliance that was introduced many years ago by an engineering company, which would have brought water, you know, snow water, snow melt down from the Canada into the United States as a water supply. And that project, had we gone through with that, could provide the cities and the farms in the West with a lot of the water that they need now. And so instead of having, you know, basically political fights over water, we could have plenty of water. But that's an international, because that's an international project, because it requires the support of Canada and also requires the support of a lot of states. So a lot of these programs really have to be done on a national basis with international negotiations. And then there are other projects that can be done, you know, within the borders of states. But it's that kind of approach, and to rebuild our economy using, you know, higher physical principles, to go, for example, not just to build more roads, but to build magnetically levitated trains as a substitute for ground transportation, and also a substitute for a lot of commuter flying, so that we don't have all these short trips on airlines. You know, so we really need to upgrade our entire economy, and we can do that.
In my opinion, the way it stands, the entire federal system is a complete mess. And I don't, you know, just look at what happened in Katrina. It seems as if it cannot really pick itself up, even with a new presidency. And in my view, we may need to go back to smaller local statewide organizations, which is what this country was built on. It was built on the colonies, the separate states. And each colony had its own system and was very effective that way. You don't feel that could be more effective, at least in the transitional times?
Well, I think we need to You know, we started out as a bunch of independent colonies, but we turned into a nation. And I think we need to solve this problem as a nation that we have, you know, that some things can be dealt with on a local level and some things can't. You know, for example, you can't have each state have its own currency. You can't have each state provide for its own defense. You can't have each state deal with all the water resource problems, you know, within that state, because you have, you know, rivers that run through many, many states and that sort of thing. And you have aquifers that cover many, many states. So a lot of these things really have to be dealt with on a more national level. I think that the issue is that people have to get involved, that we can still shape a lot of what the Obama administration does, but we have to take our responsibilities as citizens seriously. And that more than anything else is what is really required to turn this around, that the people have to make a change. We have to change ourselves if we're going to change Washington.
So what would be a temporary scenario that you could envision, or your group, how would you organize, let's say, local groups in cities or in townships? In my city, we are forming food groups where we create local community organizations where we keep in touch with each other and, you know, figure out if anybody needs anything, we can call each other, things like that. How would you envision this transitional time?
Well, I think that sort of thing that you just described is good in terms of people helping each other get through difficult times. And that's a good thing. And we people do need to help each other. The real issue, I think, that the way we look at it is that what you have to do is find a way to change the environment so that you prevent these things from becoming problems, that you have to change the overall policy of the nation, and that you have to return to the idea of the Constitution instead of what we've done, is which we've gone too much to the system, this monetary system, where we believe that manipulation of money is the basis for economics, when in fact the basis for economics is in creating conditions under which people can thrive. And it's based on things like manufacturing and education and health care, you know, those sorts of things. And that's where we need to put our emphasis.
So let's say Monday morning the banks close and federal government offices are not able to operate. Do you have faith in that grocery stores and all the services, like, you know, the electricity and gas and so on, will continue to be provided for the people? Like we won't be cut off of all these major services?
Well, that's the way it should work. The way it should work is that you put the system through an orderly bankruptcy in which a lot of this financial paper is just written off, but that you put up what amounts to a firewall to protect the people, in which you guarantee the government will provide and make sure that it has institutions which can provide the credit so that the lights stay on, that the deliveries to the grocery store continue, that the hospitals stay open, the schools stay open, so that the things that ordinary life depend on continues during this process where the financial system is reorganized.
But don't you think that's really up to each individual local government to take care of that? You know, every area has done, you know, it cannot be centrally done. I just can't envision that.
But you have to guarantee that the flow of funds to pay for these things. I mean, for example, if you may be committed to keeping the lights on in your local schools, but if the power company shuts down, And the power company is one of these multi-community or multi-city, multi-state power companies, then, you know, you have no control over that.
Well,
so,
the first problem was that the centralized banking system has taken, basically stripped the power away from the states. And the states became pretty much so dependent on the federal system that I feel that there is a very strong imbalance because in situations like this, the states are very short of funds and very, very low on power.
Yes.
And I believe in what you're proposing to bring back the credit system, we need to empower the states and the local governments. With credit, but with actual power to be able to take over.
And there are some things that they can do. I mean, you know, for example, education is always local. The state runs the education.
Mm-hmm.
And the state would have to make sure that the schools stay open.
Mm-hmm.
And the state can do that. But you also have the question of deliveries of food, and a lot of that sort of thing is interstate commerce. And states can't regulate interstate commerce. It requires a national government to do that. So what you need is a cooperation on all levels of all the various levels of government working together to make sure that the necessities of human life are provided while this financial system gets reorganized, and that, you know, that people come first. But that it requires all levels of government to do that, not just the federal government and not just the states or the local government, but everybody.
But do you have faith in our federal government, even with Obama? Let's say we have a pretty nice change of scenery in the Congress. Do you have faith in that they can easily take on this task of coordinating that quickly?
I have faith in the principles by which our nation was established. I have less faith in the individuals who hold office. However, I think that the individuals who hold office can be made with public pressure to do those things which are in the best interest of the people. And, you know, they're not used to doing it. It may take them a little prodding to get them to figure out that that's what they have to do. But we have a system which can provide that if we would just use it. You know, we don't use it very much, and that's a problem. But the system is there. The government structure is there. You know, the principles in our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are there. And we have to use them, and we have to force the government to behave properly. And I think that with enough pressure, since they're generally pretty malleable, and they go, you know, if you make them, in a sense, more afraid of getting cut off by the voters than they are of getting cut off by the money from the financiers, that they'll come around pretty quickly.
Again, just reminding everyone, we're talking with the great behind-the-scenes economist, John Hofel, and you can visit the website, www.larouchepac.com, for more information, or call 800-929-7566. You can join the organization, donate to them, and find out a lot more on the subjects that we're discussing right now. There are also links on my web pages to their site as well. So what are you currently working on, John? What is your organization putting together? Are you putting together a plan that could be submitted to the Congress?
Well, we actually have submitted. We have a bill that we have offered called the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, which has been passed by a number of cities and some states around the country to call for this kind of a banking reorganization is the first step to put the system through this bankruptcy. Now, we haven't got anyone who would introduce this into the United States Congress yet because it's kind of a political hot potato because because just the mere introduction of this thing makes the bankers very uneasy. But we've got proposals. You know, we have this legislation. We have a series of proposals on what to do. So what we're doing right now is we're organizing as hard as we can in local governments and in state governments and in the national government and among the population to build support for this approach. And, you know, at first we had some rough going because people didn't really understand how bad the financial situation was. And now people are beginning to understand that it's much worse, and that, and as we go through this process, the people they consider the experts are proving to be completely incompetent in this. You know, all you have to do is look at the public statements of people like Henry Paulson and Ben Bernanke and some of the leading bankers and even, you know, George Bush, although no one expects him to be competent, but that what they said about this crisis a year ago versus what they're doing now, that everything they've said has been wrong. Every time they tell us that everything is under control, it turns out to be a total lie. It just gets worse and worse and worse.
Well,
and
the way I see it, this system has been built up over 200 years ago, and it's like a runaway train with some crazy people at the helm. How could we go back to those same insane leaders and derail this system? Couldn't we empower the people locally, have some proposals out, and create maybe more like an emergency type situation where instead of the martial law coming from above, let's empower from below and have some real creative and practical solutions that people can do immediately to return their lives to normalcy. Are there such things in the works?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. You have to, in order for anything to work, you have to tap into the creativity of the population, because it's that creativity which will actually make the change.
Right.
It's not something that you do with a series of decrees. You know, the population has to change. I think the problem is we certainly don't want martial law. Mm-hmm. You know, God forbid that Dick Cheney would declare martial law. But what we need is a combination of people changing and then forcing the government to change. Now, it's really not the case that they've had this system for 200 years, because we had a system called the American System of Physical Economy, which worked very well and was actually changing the world for the good and taking on these empires into the 1900s. But where we've really gone wrong is in the last four decades, where beginning with, the 1968, the Vietnam War, the taking the dollar off of gold in 1971, and then this continued push to deindustrialize the country and to build up all of this financial speculation. So our real problem has occurred over the last 40 years or so. And this is as we've adopted a more and more speculative, more and more casino-like economy. And so what we have to go back to, we really don't have to go back. We could go back to some of the principles with adapted for today, about the things like what Franklin Roosevelt did with the New Deal more regulation to bring these banks under control, to stop all of the speculation, and to make sure that the government acts to defend the population as opposed to just merely protecting the money. You know, so we have the precedents here. We have a system which was designed to do that. We have precedents in FDR. And we just have to go back to a system that works and abandon this thing that has failed, this speculative model, and go back to something that works.
So did FDR use the Hamiltonian model credit system? Is that what you propose?
He did some of it. He took on, for example, he held a series of hearings, the Congress held them under his direction, which exposed the corruption of the banking system. And then he used that to build popular support for laws which highly regulated the banking system and broke up the commercial banks, made the banks become either commercial banks or investment banks. So what he did was he basically, he took on the power of these financial interests and established the principle that is that the nation has the right to regulate these activities, and that these, that your banking system has to operate for the benefit of the population of the country. Mm-hmm. That the population is not sheep to be fleeced, that this is what rules the country, the population, the wealth, the general welfare of the population. So he didn't go to a full Hamiltonian credit system, but he didn't really have the power to do that. But what he did do was establish that that the welfare of the population comes first, and that the banking system could not just fleece the population. And then all of these regulations that he got passed, from, you know, Glass-Steagall, the banking reorganizations, the electric utility reorganizations, that sort of thing, where he provided all of this protection. These were systematically stripped away by Congress since then. And the result is that what FDR was warning us about and fought has happened all over again.
Stripped away, meaning it became more government-controlled or privately controlled?
No, that the government has served to remove the regulations that protect the public from rapacious activity by these private companies. That, for example, you remove the restrictions which between the barrier between commercial banking and investment banking. And so you have all these banks merge into these huge, huge financial institutions which dabble in everything and which are now being seen as too big to let fail, so they're being bailed out. You have the removal of electricity regulations which created carefully regulated public utilities, which created the environment in which things like Enron could occur, and the, you know, the price gouging and the shortages and all that came from that. Mm-hmm. That you removed regulations on all sorts of things, which then allowed enormous speculation to occur, and, you know, we sort of have to, one step after another, destroyed a lot of the controls which keep these parasites from taking over our economy.
Well, maybe I'm just speaking for me, maybe I'm speaking for many others, but I don't trust big corporations. I don't trust a big government, and I think a lot of people are coming to that conclusion. And when you have this, environment of no trust, where the government and big corporations do not trust people, and spread fear, you know, like identity theft, you know, you shouldn't trust your fellow citizen because they will steal your identity. There's that situation going on. And on the other end, our population is really, really slowly but surely waking up to the fact that we cannot trust our governments and our private corporations. What do you do in a climate like that?
Well, I mean, first, I would agree with you. You can't trust them. And that's a problem. And so what you have to do is you have to understand the principles by which a nation should be organized, which I think are very, very well laid out in the Constitution. And you have to go about changing the population to enforce those things so that the government, we as citizens do not allow the government to do some of the things that it's done. And we as citizens force our government to keep these corporations in line and make them act on behalf of the public welfare and not treat the public as something that they can just, loot at will. We're not sheep to be sheared by either government or the corporation. But a lot of that starts with us, and it's not just a matter of deciding that you don't like it. It's a matter of what kind of a structure can you put together to ensure that what they're doing now doesn't happen. And the real weakness in all of the local control and localized government and local control and that sort of thing is that it doesn't give you the strength to take on these giant cartels and this imperial apparatus. That it requires the strength of a nation state and that structure, because the government of the United States, as established by the Constitution, is the most advanced, most powerful form of political organization yet developed by man. And it proves strong enough to take on these empires and strong enough to keep all these corporations and things in line and protect the welfare of the population. The problem is that the population, we've become so dumbed down and ignorant of these basic principles that we quit paying attention and the corruption seeped in.
So do you feel the Hamiltonian credit system can be fully, I mean, are we ripe and ready to accept this kind of a system, the Hamiltonian credit system?
Well, we're certain. Whether the population is ready to accept it, I think the population, if people understood what we were actually talking about and what the benefits we would get from putting this debt system down and starting up a new Hamiltonian system, that they would support it. That people would support it if they understood it. The problem is in getting them to understand it and to get over their fear of admitting that what we have now doesn't work and needs to be changed, needs to be put through bankruptcy.
So tell us a little bit more about the Hamiltonian system. Are they actually issuing paper money, or is it like a letter of credit kind of system?
It would be both. That under if you talk about a Hamiltonian system where the government, the Congress of the United States authorizes, typically it works around sort of a mission orientation where you have projects that you want to develop. So you identify infrastructure projects that need to be built to make the nation more productive. It's like why we have the public build roads. The public builds roads in order to provide an environment under which economic activity can occur more efficiently, so that you create the conditions whereby then you have individuals, creative individuals, who can come up with ways to do business, and you provide them with an environment in which they can actually do this, as opposed to, you know, the problem we would have if we still had mud roads and things like that. So you have a system which uses the government as the representative of the people to help build these infrastructure projects to provide the environment in which then the creativity of the individual can flourish. Mm-hmm. And that is what makes it so powerful, because it's the government is not directing everything. The government is shaping, is creating an environment under which that the creativity can thrive. And as we all know, that when you allow human creativity to thrive, then you start getting progress. It's when it's stifled that you don't have any progress. And so you set up a credit system, you identify projects that need to be done to solve certain problems. We have very inefficient ways of moving goods from one place to the other. You know, we move way too much stuff by truck these days, and our highways are just loaded with trucks, and a lot of the trucks are, you know, tearing up the roads because they're increasingly heavy. You put more and more of a load on these trucks. When if we could build things like magnetic levitated trains, high-speed trains that were faster than any trains in the world today, to carry goods and passengers, so that it would be feasible to take a train, say, from Seattle to San Francisco, that which would actually be competitive with flying.
I had a friend that I interviewed on this show who created a beautiful design for mass tram system, which is a hybrid operational mass tram system. It's not maglev. It's much cheaper to operate and create. It would solve so many problems. We approached many private investors, billionaires. We sent it to even Schwarzenegger. We did not get back one word of reply from any of these sources. I worked for him as a volunteer for several months.
Uh-huh.
It is a beautiful system. It uses actually recycled Boeing airplanes. He used to work for Boeing as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, very, very inexpensive. All he needed was about $15 million
uh-huh.
to just create a local system, but it can be a fast nationwide system as well.
Mm-hmm.
No word from anywhere, you know. And this is why I'm telling you, you know, the atmosphere, the climate is so incredibly non-trusting on both sides. It's like a Mexican standoff.
Well,
do you feel that?
Yeah, I think so, because we've all learned that basically, in the large, everybody's lying. That if you look at the public statements of virtually any politician or any company, they don't tell you the truth. They tell you what they tell you is determined by what they want you to think. So it's all spin. And, you know, another definition of spin is just lying. I mean, when was the last time you felt like you saw a politician come out and tell the truth? Just the straight, unvarnished truth, as opposed to spinning something. Or a corporation which gets caught doing something wrong, and instead of coming out and saying, yeah, we were wrong, we're going to fix this,
mm-hmm.
you know, they start spinning.
Yeah.
And, you know,
because really their job is really not to fix the problems. You know, we expect politicians to do just that, as it used to be, like you said, 100 years ago. Unfortunately, what we have for politicians are career criminals who only go into politics to earn some free money and do nothing for it. And in this climate, of course, we cannot hand over our lives and our power to them. That's my view anyhow.
No, I agree with you on that. I think, though, that doesn't solve the problem of making sure that we have a government which works. And so, therefore, what we have to do is we have, through the power of the polls, the ability to take back control of our government. And it comes back to the citizen. What are we doing? Why do we keep electing, re-electing these people who lie to us, who prove to be either incompetent or crooks, or, you know, we keep electing them. Well, why? That's our fault. So we have to stop that. You can't have a system of government which is fair, run by people who don't pay attention. We have to pay attention. And until we do, until we start asserting our voice and throwing some of these bums out and making sure that the government does the right thing, well, it's not going to happen. It's up to us.
Well, John, I know this is a little discouraging, but do you feel like I do, that I have great faith in our youth, our 30-somethings, 20, 30-somethings, that may not want to have much government involvement? Do you have any final encouraging words for them?
The most encouraging thing I can say is that we have our system of government, as given to us by the Founding Fathers, will work if we meet our responsibilities. And so, to all of the youth, and I work with a number of very bright people of that generation who were committed to changing things. And all I'd say is, learn, you know, read what the Founding Fathers said, understand the principles that underlie our form of government, master those principles, and then make sure that the government follows them. And if we do that, we can turn things around.
Do you feel that they're really getting it, that they're really returning to the Constitution as a basis, and they will start to turn things around in this country?
Some are. Some are. I mean, as with anything, if you make a generalization that says that, you know, everybody says or everybody knows, well, that's not really true. But certainly there is a large segment of the younger generation which is actively looking for some way to give themselves a future, because they know that the way things are going, they have no future.
And at the same time, this unique situation we have in this country could also provide some basic inspiration to the rest of the world, since many other countries don't even use such a good constitution as we have here.
When we were doing it right in the, you know, after the Civil War in particular, when we were operating our American system properly, we were changing the world. We were spreading these ideas around the world. The whole world, you know, we had allies with Russia, with Germany, with Japan. We were, you know, building railroad networks around the world, opening up the interiors of all sorts of countries in ways that had never been opened up before, transforming the world. And it was very powerful. And, you know, what happened, we had, then you had the Russian Revolution and World War I, and things sort of got thrown off track. And we've never really gotten back to it. But if we do it and do it right and show the world how things can actually be changed, then they're all in favor of it. You know, we'll have a lot of support. The only people who wouldn't go along with this would be these imperial types who think they have a right to run the world. And, you know, my view of that is, you guys had your shot, but this isn't medieval Europe anymore, and it's time we moved on.
Yes, excellent. On that note, I want to thank you for this very informative interview, John, and wish you all the greatest success with your efforts with the LaRouche organization. Again, reminding everyone, visit www.larouchepac.com for more information, or you can call them directly at 1-800-929-7566 on all these subjects we discussed today. And please join or support, donate to them so that this word can get out to as many people as possible. Thank you so much again. It was an honor, John, for having you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Friends, as I mentioned earlier in the show, after the dark of the night comes the dawn, and we are on the first few minutes of this bright dawn. I'm very hopeful. If you just stay vigilant, tolerant, and loving with ourselves, with each other around us, the night is all over. The fifth night is over. On this magnificent sixth day, we will begin to rebuild from zero. And the only thing you need to bring is your good, heartfelt, loving self. The rest will be up to us, and it will unfold very nicely. Let us continue to conduct vigilant prayers for peace and prosperity and abundance for all on this planet of ours, and raise our consciousness, raise our frequencies, so we can start a new page today. Let's finish this incredible time today with our usual closing gratitude intent. I'm grateful, and I know now that there is nothing that I could truly desire that is not at this very moment standing at the door of my consciousness, ready to appear in my life and affairs. I have only to be conscious of this truth, and every need is met, every problem solved, every question answered. My consciousness of the holy high self within is all I will ever need for all eternity. And so it is. Friends, our next show will air live on Wednesday, December 10th at 2 p.m. Pacific and 5 p.m. Eastern. I will have an open show for many call-ins and questions, readings, comments next time on December 10th. In January, we will have two great interviews. I'm looking forward to those, with our world-renowned alternative research expert, Michael Tesarian, who's been a great mentor to me. And on January 21st, Barbara Henclow will return to discuss Day 6 of the Mayan calendar in greater detail. So please mark your calendars for January 7th and the 21st of 2009. You can also check my web pages for details on upcoming shows, and please visit the Earth Harmony Archives if you missed this show or any other shows. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Elizabeth, checking out. Until we meet again next time, have a great Thanksgiving, and blessed be all. Thank you.
Now is the final stages of this parasite upon our wages. Inflate or die with its last breath. The Fed will eat itself to death. The banksters get what they deserve when Congress sends the Fed Reserve.